Okay.
Wishing and hoping and thinking and praying, planning and dreaming each night of his child that won't get you into his arms. So if you're looking to find love that you can share, all you gotta do is hold him and kiss him and love him and show him that you care.
Hello and welcome to episode 293 of the Samuel and Manuel Movie Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Sam Reimer.
And I'm Manny Manuel.
All right, part 13 of our 1997 miniseries starts now. We're going to be talking about My Best Friend's Wedding. Julia Roberts getting her money's worth on the podcast recently.
Mm-hmm.
Feels like Pretty Woman wasn't that long ago. Probably a few months ago now, I guess. Time as we know, is a construct, but we just recently talked about Pretty Woman. I'm going to say, I don't know.
September.
What? God damn. God, how old am I? Am I 50? I'm going to be soon enough, the way things are progressing. How many months ago is that? Seven months ago? God damn, this shit's crazy. So yeah, I guess second time talking about Julia Roberts this year, which is still a lot. I mean, it's the 90s, so it makes sense that she's going to be in a lot of shit. But yeah, I was excited to get into it. So yeah, I guess let's do that.
Let's do that. We will be reviewing My Best Friend's
gracious.
Horrible.
We are way wow. out of it.
My Best Friend's Wedding, released June 20th, 1997, directed by P.J. Hogan, written by Ron Bass, starring Julia Roberts, Dermot Mulroney, and Cameron Diaz, has a Metascore of 51, a Letterboxd score of 3.2, had one Oscar nomination for Best Original Score, Musical, or Comedy. Had a budget of $38 million. It grossed $127 million, making it the ninth highest grossing film of the year.
Holy smokes.
And it made $299 million worldwide. The plot: when a woman's longtime friend reveals he's engaged, she realizes she loves him herself and sets out to get him with only days before the wedding. Sam, I just found out you'd never seen this movie before. Why don't you give us your spoiler-free thoughts on My Best Friend's Wedding?
Yeah, so I didn't do our normal Sam predicts the plot for this because I obviously wasn't here last week. But had I been here, I don't think I would have guessed specifically what this is. But I probably would have gotten pretty close.
I think you would have gotten close, except for the actual plot.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So I started with Julia Roberts a little bit already. So I mean, we can probably start there because she is the main reason to enjoy this movie. She's perfectly cast.
Mm-hmm.
She was on an absolute tear in the 90s.
Not true.
No.
No.
Oh, I guess coming off this, Pretty Woman was 90.
90. This is 97.
Hook was 91.
Yes.
Which she did not get good reviews for.
Yes. She actually is on a fucking losing streak.
I would love for you to bring this up.
Okay,
I would love to hear all about it.
Okay. So after after Pretty Woman, she has a couple good ones. So she has Flatliners. The original one's not bad. I know you watched the remake and you hated it.
Yeah.
And then Sleeping with the Enemy, which is pretty decent. Dying Young is okay, but then she has The Hook. She plays herself in The Player. I'm not counting that. The Pelican Brief is a hit, but then she has I Love Trouble, Ready to Wear, Something to Talk About, Everyone Says I Love You, Mary Riley, Michael Collins.
All
of those.
Zeros.
Zeros. Zeros across the board.
Shit.
So this, in 97, her doing this reinvigorates her as one of the biggest stars.
Okay.
And then she goes on and does a whole bunch of really good movies after this.
Interesting. I thought this was right smack dab in the middle of success.
No,
this is right at the beginning.
This basically rejuvenates her career.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have written in my notes that she is perfectly cast for this because she has, as we just saw in Pretty Woman, we have a lot of carryover from that in the sense that her raw likability is doing wonders for this role.
Yes.
She has insane charm and insane beauty. The big curly hair is just gorgeous. I have written in my notes, it makes her one of the only human beings on Earth who could make this character even remotely likable. Even the least bit likable. Yeah, so this isn't on the level of Pretty Woman as far as the performance, but it's pretty close. I'm just going to say this. Jules, or I have her written as Julianne in my notes because I think that is her actual name, but she's mostly referred to as Jules.
She's
right?
mostly referred to as Jules. Yeah,
yeah, so Jules is a complete sociopath. She is selfish, manipulative, narcissistic, cowardly. She is almost irredeemable. She has almost nothing I like about her at all.
Yeah.
She is horrible.
Yeah.
She is a terrible friend, and I don't know why this guy is friends with her.
Agreed.
She is the worst.
Agreed.
I think the key
is
to...
Is that why I relate to her?
She's a total fucking narcissist. Dude.
Yes.
Complete narcissist.
Yes. She might actually be worse than me.
That's... You're worse than the guys who watch Wolf of Wall Street and they're like, money and power and women. Like, that's great. Or who watch Taxi Driver. They're like, you know, I'm glad that he got a little bit of justice in the end. If you relate to Jules in my best friend's wedding, that is a huge problem. Huge problem's a stretch. It's nothing. I think the key to writing a character like this in a successful way is that you need to have them see the error of their ways. And since we're still in non-spoiler, I won't get too into it. Suffice it to say, I'm not really satisfied with that aspect of it.
I can understand that.
I'm not really satisfied that this person has been changed due to their experiences in this film.
I can understand that.
So that's a bit of a tough thing for me to get through. Apparently, you may have this in trivia, you may not. Apparently, test audiences hated the original ending.
Yes.
Because they hated Julia Roberts' character.
Yes.
Apparently, the original ending was a lot more straightforward rom-com-y.
Yes, it was.
And people were like, this woman sucks. Yep. Like, she does not deserve everything nice to happen to her at the end. So that's kind of funny that they basically rewrote the ending for that. I do mostly like the ending of this movie. I think it's pretty good. And I really like...
I do like how they ended it.
Yeah. Julia Roberts' performance is awesome.
Yes.
It's fucking great.
Yes.
It's not quite on the level of Pretty Woman, but it's up there.
Yep.
It's really good. Like I said, insanely charming. And if this was played by anybody else, I would probably write this movie off as being like, oh, they just wrote the main character wrong.
you need a movie star in this role.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong. I'm not saying you can't have an unlikable protagonist in your role, or at least like an anti-hero or something like that. But usually you have something to grab onto. You have like, oh, they're a piece of shit, but... But like, honestly, this character gets... opportunity after opportunity after opportunity to do the right thing. And I think, for the record, I do think the screenplay is pretty good.
Yep.
And I think a lot of the intrigue comes from, and a lot of the suspense comes from, oh, here's another opportunity. Maybe she's going to do it this time. Maybe she's going to do the right thing, or at least do a thing that's not terrible. And time again, she instead takes the coward's way out and does the easier thing that fucks somebody over, but it's easier for her. So that's a little unfortunate. Dermot Mulroney is not an actor I actually have a lot of experience with. I think he has a brief run on New Girl, but other than that, I don't have a ton of experience with him.
He has a small role in Zodiac.
Oh, who's he in Zodiac?
He is Mark Ruffalo's captain.
Oh, okay. Yep. I like his performance. I think it's good. I don't think he's nearly to the level of Julia Roberts, but I think it's a good performance. He's kind of a dick as well. I like him better. I like him better than Jules. I think the MVP, I won't go as far as to say okay. The MVP not yet, because, you know, we get there at the end, I think. But I got to give a shout out to... the character George.
Rupert Everett.
Specifically his character and how he is the voice of reason. He is such an important role in the movie, I think, because his character is how you know. He's basically the angel on her shoulder. He's basically the one saying, like, you know what the right thing to do is. Like, you know what you have to do to solve this. And then I guess the writing decision is just to have her not do it all the time. I struggled with this movie at times. I think that there's a number of fantastic scenes, which we'll get into. I think that the likability aspect is something that I battled against, and I was holding out hope for an ending that redeemed her a little bit more. I didn't feel that it did enough to redeem her. But with that being said, I was satisfied with the ending. And I was satisfied with what was an excellent Julia Roberts performance. So yeah, I have, let's say, not controversial opinions, but like, not divisive, but like polarized. Let's say my opinion is polarized.
Okay.
There was some really good and some really uncomfortable.
Okay. Say.
But yeah, I'll leave it there for now.
This movie means a lot to me. This is one of the first movies that I went and saw. When this movie came out, I had just met, I just met a young woman that would become a very important part of my life, and is still an important part of my life to this day. I had met someone that would quickly become one of my best friends. Only just over a month prior to this movie being released, I met this woman named Pandora, and this is one of the first movies we ever saw together. And anytime I watch it, it just reminds me of her. And not because her and I have made a pact or anything like that, but it's one of the first movies that her and I watched together, as well as another 1997 rom-com called Addicted to Love that is very dark. But this one, one of the reasons – let's see. I got to make sure I don't really spoil too much, but we did kind of get into it. One of the reasons I love this movie is it completely upends the whole romantic comedy formula. Your main character is the villain of the movie. And I find that fun as fuck. Because you have, at the time, one of the biggest stars in the world who is trying to revive her career, who is almost America's sweetheart. Meg Ryan was America's sweetheart at this time. But Julie Roberts is trying to come back, and everyone remembers her from Pretty Woman, and they're looking for that magic again, and it comes back here. And then she goes on a pretty good run after this. You need someone with her charisma and her acting ability to carry this character. Otherwise, this movie just does not work. And despite the incredibly evil and narcissistic and horrible things she does
to her best friend,
you are still rooting for her to make it work somehow. Not for her plan to work, but for her to become a better person. Mm-hmm. I do love that they changed the ending, because I love
if they went the with what I suspect the original ending was, this movie sucks.
Yep.
This movie straight up sucks.
Yep. I truly would not like this movie as much as I do if the ending was different than what it was. I've always had a great time with this movie. Dermot Mulroney, he holds a special place in my heart now because of this film, and he's also in a movie that over the years has only continued to grow on me more and more and to mean more and more to me, and that's The Family Stone. Is he a good actor? No, not really. He's not. He's not a bad actor,
no.
But he's not great. His facial expressions and the way he looks at times reminds me of a really good friend of mine named Chris Farmer. And so I think because of that, I always kind of have this affection for him. I think Michael, the character, he's fine. I don't dislike him as much as you did because you called him an asshole.
He's a bit of an asshole.
I don't find him being an asshole at all. His choice of friends.
Oh, yeah, that's bad.
Is odd. Especially considering, like, and again, it's something we can get into when we get into the spoilers or break down the movie. There's a lot of aspects of this movie I just kind of have to suspend my disbelief on, which we will get into. But the fact that his choice was for his best man as a younger brother, but he doesn't have any other friends.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. I've made it fairly well known that I have a distaste for Cameron Diaz.
Yes.
And the more I kind of dive into her movies, I've kind of realized that I don't know why I don't like her. I think it's because she is so horribly miscast and not good in Gangs of New York. That it really it lowers that movie. So, but she's so good in so many other things that I think I need to just kind of say she fucked up. She shouldn't have been in Gangs of New York. Don't hold it against her as much as you do.
No, Scorsese fucked up.
Yeah. So she's incredible in this. I love her role as Kimmy. I think she is amazing. And Rupert Everett was a revelation.
Dude, who is he? Kay. Who the fuck is he?
Yeah. He's had small roles in a lot of things. This was this close. I'm not kidding. This close to turning him into a superstar because of this movie. Mm-hmm. I'm not lying. There, he was so good and so beloved in this role. There was honest talk about casting him as James Bond and making James Bond gay.
Wow.
There was active rumors
in 1997. That's crazy.
Yes. That's how popular this character was in 97 after this movie.
The film community is so funny. It was like, you could just cast him and keep James Bond straight if you wanted. Because I imagine that they decided to not do it because, you know, it was probably insane backlash in 97. It'd be insane backlash now. Yeah.
So this Rupert Everett was one of the very few openly gay actors. Hmm. But he wasn't, like, I didn't know him prior to this.
Yeah.
And when this came out, he hit, like, the talk show circuit, and he was killing it. He is very charming. George is...
You might even say he's Prince Charming.
Prince Charming.
In Shrek 2.
Oh, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's a revelation in this film. Yeah, why don't we get into it? Let's break down the movie.
Cool.
Sam, you haven't been here in a while. Take us in.
Oh, I would love to. All right. My best friend's wedding. It's about to be spoiled. I think if you listened to us, A, you have an idea of whether or not you'd want to watch it. B, you may have an idea of how this movie actually goes. But nonetheless, you know, watch it if you dare. And we'll be spoiling it shortly. Here we go. 3, 2, 1, go fuck yourself.
What's your first scene, Sam?
My first scene, as I navigate back to my notes, is... sorry, let me find these things here. Doobie-doobie-doo. Okay, I wanted to go to the opening scene in the restaurant.
Fire away.
Not the opening scene of, like, the musical number.
Yeah.
But the opening scene in the restaurant. You still haven't seen The Bear, right?
Correct.
This is basically The Bear. It's really funny that I watched this, and I was watching this with Emma, and we were both like, holy shit, this is, like, The Bear, like, this is exactly what this is. It's just people screaming at each other that they're going to kill their family if they don't get the order right, and just, like, quick edits and, like, dishes sliding across tables and stuff. It's basically the entire first episode of The Bear and a number of other ones. So that was pretty funny. I'm surprised that a number of the things in the first act of this movie feel like they should be, from a screenwriting perspective, a bigger deal, let's say. Like, the fact that she's a food critic is made pretty prominent. Like, our introduction to her is her, like, we get a VIP slip on the, and then a cut to her, right after we see VIP, we cut to her face, and she's eating, and these people are waiting on bated breath to see what she's going to say about it. There's this big introduction that she's, like a pretty important person in this world. And it's just kind of dropped. Like, there's nothing about food at all later on. I don't have any specific ideas on how they could incorporate it. I was just surprised that this didn't come back, really, at all.
It's thrown in her face later on.
How so? Oh, is that in Comiskey, the bathroom? Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's thrown in her face. But yeah, I mean, that feels... Yeah, I just expected more, I guess. That's not really a good thing or a bad thing, just I was a little bit surprised this didn't come back. That and the pact, I thought, were going to be maybe bigger plot points moving forward. I felt like the pact was only really mentioned in passing at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. Regardless, I just wanted to bring up the restaurant scene because I thought it was... a great character introduction, the yep. VIP with the cut to her. Even though it gave me a different idea about her than the character I would eventually come to know, I thought it was a really good intro.
Yeah.
That was good.
Yeah, you get to know her. The other thing that they do mention here, and there is a huge, huge suspension of disbelief for you to be able to, if you can let go of it, then you're able to just kind of roll on with this movie and the concept behind it. But the big thing is that apparently her and her best friend They are best friends, but they don't live in the same city. He's a traveling sports writer, and she says she was traveling for her book tour. So they haven't spoken in a long time, and you need to accept that.
Yeah.
Because the phone call says that they haven't spoken in months. He's met somebody. They're getting married in 5 days.
Yeah. That did even though it didn't bug me long term, that did stick out to me as like, oh, okay, that's a lot of information for somebody to learn right away.
Yes. So as long as you can breeze past that these two people are best friends, and she just found out that he's seeing somebody new, they're about to get married, and it's in four or five days, if you can let that go, then you'll be fine for the rest of the way.
Let's just say I noticed it, but it didn't affect my enjoyment in the long term.
If you're hanging up on that, fucking stop watching.
Oh man,
movies.
You're in for a bad time.
you're in for a bad time watching any movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stop what you're doing. Go watch documentaries.
Kyle.
Yeah. but yeah, it is a great way to set up the character. It also introduces us to George, where she points out very pointedly that he is gay.
Yeah, the writing was a little bit clunky on that. It was just like, he's like you, but straight. Oh, yeah. I was like, okay, yeah, I guess we have a gay best friend. Got it.
Cool. My first scene isn't until the karaoke bar.
Yeah, okay, that's the next one I have, actually.
All right. Yeah. My first note. I fucking love this scene.
Dude, Cameron Diaz is awesome in this scene.
Yes.
She's great.
Now, we have to set this up. Cameron Diaz's character, Kimmy, has asked Jules to be her maid of honor. And Jules is here to steal Michael away. She learns that Kimmy doesn't like karaoke bars. So Jules sets up an evening for the three of them at a karaoke bar. You bitch. Then, Jules starts undermining Kimmy. Michael tries to... Oh, well, first off, purposely not including her in the conversation where Jules and Michael are reminiscing about their past, their history, their inside jokes. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that.
Something about Tuscany, I think?
Or... No, Florence.
Florence, yeah.
Florence. And there's nothing wrong with that. I love to reminisce about inside jokes or stories that I share with my best friends, with other people there. But after I've had my inside joke, I include the other person by telling them the story.
Yeah, of course.
Jules doesn't do that. And right there, you're like, that's cunty.
Yeah, I definitely already disliked her. And then when she... Like, I already disliked her. I was like, that's kind of mean. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Like, I know you're here to win the guy over, but, like, you're not doing a great job.
Yeah.
And then her volunteering Kimmy for karaoke.
Nope. First it starts, Michael volunteers her. Mm-hmm. And Kimmy's like, no. And Jules saves her.
Yeah.
Saying she doesn't want to sing. So she stands up, gets the mic, spotlight on her, and then puts her on mic.
That was a huge... If I already didn't like her all that much, I thought I was going to at least be on her side and, you know, we were going to have her be a particular kind of character, a well-intentioned but flawed character. Here, I'm like, Julia Roberts is a cunt.
Yeah. Yeah.
Holy.
And what happens next in regards to performances and the way it makes me feel is nothing short of amazing. Kimmy starts singing horribly. And one of my favorite things is I love when they add in background noise. Because mm-hmm. she starts singing and you hear somebody go, "You suck!" It makes me laugh every time. And she keeps going and you can see Jules's evil grin. And she's like...
I've embarrassed her.
Yeah. But what happens is Kimmy does... Because she's such a great person, she just keeps going. And because she's so bad, she starts to win over the crowd.
Yeah, everybody's like, holy shit, I can't believe she's still going. Like,
yes.
That's awesome.
And everyone's like so proud of her because you can tell immediately that she is uncomfortable doing it. And she wins over the crowd. And what I love is when everyone starts cheering her, Jules starts looking around like, what the fuck is going on here? And then you cut to great, and it's one of the great things that he does in this movie is Dermot Mulroney's reactions to what's going on. He is falling even more in love with Kimmy in this moment. Mm-hmm. As he's watching her get through her fears, destroying this song, not in a good way. Yeah. She is horrible. And he's just like, I love this woman even more. And then when the crowd gets her going and she gets into it, her singing doesn't get better, but she becomes more confident in how bad it is.
Yeah.
And it's fucking adorable. And then Jules finally just has to give in, and she starts clapping along.
This is maybe one of the most likable moments from Jules, this brief moment of humility where she gives in to the crowd. She's like, yeah, like, you fucking bested me there, and just starts clapping along. Like,
yep.
And she, she's like, has a smile on her face. Like, she's like tipping the cap to her opponent.
Yeah. Round one to you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I got to sneeze. Here, go ahead.
Yeah. The next moment that I have after karaoke, assuming that we are done with that, is I think this is the next one chronologically. I may have messed this up, but I have The Moment Passes You By on the boat.
Oh, that's way past.
Yeah.
Okay. I've got two before that. Okay, what do you have? What's your after that?
Yeah, you know what? That is the next one. That is the next one that I have.
Okay.
I just double-checked my raw notes to see where the next one I have is. Okay. So I have two more that are after the boat ride.
Okay. Wow. Okay. So I've got another... I wanted to highlight another horrible one that she does. This is where she gets Kimmy to get her dad in and ask Michael to quit his job and come work for her dad.
Mm-hmm.
They arrive at dinner, and it's not subtle that when Jules arrives at the dinner table, in the background, a large flame goes off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because she is literally the devil.
Mm-hmm.
When Jules arrives, it appears that Michael and Kimmy have already been in the middle of a or about to start a conversation. And Jules feigns ignorance because she's the one that set this up. So Kimmy tells Michael that it's actually her dad that needs the favor. And they've had to do some restructuring, and they need some help in the public relations department. And would Michael consider coming to work for her dad for maybe 6 months? And then once everything's back, that he could go back. It is also stated that Kimmy is quitting school to become an engineer to join Michael on the road as to be with her husband while he's on the road writing for Sport
Which
magazine.
Is one of the things I was alluding to when I said Michael's a dick. I think that's a really shitty thing to ask.
I don't think he asked.
Hmm.
From everything that this conversation implies, they agreed upon it.
Okay.
I think what they said is that they wanted to be together, and Michael's like, well, I have a job that I love. I don't really want to quit. And she probably's like, well, why don't I just quit school and then we can be together? My understanding is most likely her plan was maybe a year or two down the line, she'll go back.
Hmm.
That was my understanding.
Yeah.
That's the way I've always interpreted it. I never took it as Michael saying, you need to quit your job and come be with me. I think what it was is Kimmy wants to be with her husband. And so the only way that they can be together, because he's a traveling sports writer, is for her to quit school and go be with him.
Yep.
So when she starts saying this, Michael starts getting angry. He's like, he is so angry that Kimmy's going back on her word. That's mm-hmm. something they've already agreed to.
Yeah.
He does get a little shitty about it.
Mm-hmm.
Starts to gaslight her a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Making her feel guilty. And you can see, again, great reactions. Jules is loving it. Oh, yeah. They're about to fight.
Yeah.
And then Kimmy finally knows that she can't come clean and say, I did plan this. But what she does... what she does, which is very rare in a relationship, the woman admits she's wrong. She admits that she was wrong. She admits that what she did was wrong and that she went back on her word. And she just completely breaks down and begs for his forgiveness. Michael is stunned. But the best part of this scene is Jules' reaction in the background of like, what the fuck?
Yeah, digging your heels.
What the fuck is going on? Like, she is just like so lost. And so because Kimmy admits that she's being, that admits what she did was wrong, tells Michael that she's like, you're right. I went back on my word. I shouldn't have done that. You know, you want to keep your job. That's fine. It makes you happy. That makes me happy. And she begs for his forgiveness. And he, of course, gives it. Not because he's getting what he wants, but because she was big enough to admit that she was in the wrong. Mm-hmm. And I love that they reconnect. And in the background, you just see Jules like, this blew up in my face. I just, once again, made them closer.
Yeah, she calls George, I think, right after. And yes. says, like, this, I think she says, the bitch left me out to dry or something. Yeah. Like that. I can't remember exactly what she says, but something about that phone call, she's just like, I can't believe it. Like, I can't believe that this didn't work also. And it is a devious plan.
It is a devious plan. And it's not even the most devious one.
Yeah. No, it is not.
I fucking die laughing at Julia Roberts' reactions to them reconnecting.
Yeah.
I, like, her eyes fucking kill me. Okay, before you have that, I have, I'm kind of shocked you, I have the lobster lunch.
Okay, yeah. Go ahead.
This is, George has flown in to try to save his friend. Mm-hmm. He is a good friend.
Yeah.
He has flown in from New York to Chicago to try and save his friend.
Yeah, I should have had this. That's okay.
And instead of accepting the help that George has offered, she uses him to try and make Michael jealous. Once George realizes this, he's like, well, you want to play? We'll play. So he meets the family and they invite him to lunch. And at this, which is, again, a little suspension of disbelief, a billionaire family takes them to basically the Red Lobster.
Yeah.
It could have been a high-end seafood place, but the waiters have lobster claws as hands.
So it was not.
But they do ask that they want to know, how did George and Julia meet? Or Jules. Hmm. Julianne. And George is going over the top, telling the story, pulling everybody in with his charisma and the way he tells stories. The Doris Day Rock Hudson quote made me fucking laugh. Mm-hmm. It still makes me laugh, but I love that Jules rolls her eyes. You understand that reference, right?
I don't know.
Okay, so Doris Day and Rock Hudson had all these romantic movies together. Mm. Rock Hudson's gay in real life.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. So him using that
is like a little wink to anybody who might know.
Yes, and Jules like rolls her eyes so hard when he says that. It's fucking great. And he leads them all down this primrose path to basically sing a Dionne Warwick song. And he starts singing, and they all fucking laugh. And then they all start singing in, and then the whole restaurant joins in. In the theater, this killed. I was dying in the theater when this was happening. The whole theater was fucking laughing. I love this scene. It makes me so happy. Michael does start to get a little jealous. So this part of the plan actually kind of works a little bit. But this scene just fills me with joy. Absolutely fills me with joy.
Yeah. I mentioned off the top that I think George is a great character. And him flying in to support his friend is not only such a great friend move, but also the kind of move that these days only a rich friend can do. Because there's no way. I mean, he is he's a publisher. He's the editor or something like that. So, of course, he has the dough to go and do this on a whim. But
good. We also have to remember flights in the States are very cheap.
That's true. Yeah, especially within the States.
Yes.
Yeah. So that is very true. They don't have fucking Air Canada and WestJet.
Side note, yeah. If I remember correctly, it cost me less on my honeymoon to fly. We drove to Seattle, mm-hmm. Seattle to Vegas, stayed in Vegas for a few days, Seattle to Boston, Vegas to Boston, yeah. And then Boston back to Seattle. That was the whole flights. Mm-hmm. The flights from Seattle to Vegas, Vegas to Boston, Boston to Seattle was less than than what it cost for me to fly from Canada to Boston.
Yeah, which is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's the piece on the airfare in the movie.
Yeah.
But George is such a good friend, goes and supports her, gives her all the answers.
Yes.
Gives her the answer key. Like, listen, you already know what you need to do. You need to go to this man and be honest with him and say, I am so sorry for making your life more difficult, but I love you and I need you to make a decision. That's it. That's the entirety of what you need to do. And she goes, okay, I'm gonna do it. And this is one of the many opportunities she has while Michael is getting fitted for his tux, I believe.
Yep.
One of the many opportunities. By the way, I love that the sleeve comes off. I think that's a hilarious little moment. And she, again, you can see, great moment of acting from Julia Roberts, the moment where she decides she's not going to do that, where she instead is going to take the coward's way out again and sewer her friend George, who just flew out to fucking help her.
Yep.
Which is so annoying, but she instead drags him into it and involves him in a lie. There's a great moment where this movie's PG-13, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it only has one F-bomb. The F-bomb is great. I love seeing where PG-13 movies decide where to put their F-bomb. This was very good use. Yeah, he just flew out to fuck me. I mean, he just flew out for a few hours to fuck me. It takes a few hours.
Yeah.
Super fucking funny. That was one of the biggest laughs of the movie for me. George, being the great friend that he is, doesn't instantly sewer her back and say, no, I am actually quite gay and I am not in love with you, but instead uses the opportunity to embarrass his friend.
Yes.
In a different way, while still trying to convince her to do the right thing.
Yep.
This man is far better than she deserves.
Yes.
But he handles it with such class and such grace. You're right. I love this section of the movie. And she's like, oh no, are you going to embarrass me? And he's like, only if I can, I think is the line.
Yeah.
And he's just shaking the hands of everybody, dropping little hints that he might be gay as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's all comedy gold. When we get to the lobster lunch, it could be simply that a number of these references went over my head here, but the song, just nothing, just no emotion about the song. I'm like, okay, I guess we're singing a song. I have no connection to the song. I have no connection to anything regarding the scene. So this felt out of place for me. I must have missed something, because I was like, oh, okay, it felt strangely out of place for me.
Okay.
But yeah, everything leading up to that with George getting there was great. The lobster lunch was, you know, the story was great. The song.
Oh, the song fucking killed me. Yeah. Absolutely fucking killed me. Okay, that takes us to your scene, because
yeah,
this is after the lobster lunch, because George has flown home and they're on the boat tour on the Chicago River.
Yeah, do you have this one as well?
No.
Oh, dude, this scene, I thought, this might be one of the sexiest scenes where nobody kisses and everybody has their clothes on.
Yep.
this is an incredibly sexy scene.
Yes. And very, yeah, and so tender.
Yeah.
And real.
It is. It absolutely is. There is real heat and, yeah, the tenderness that they have and the real emotion that they have behind all of this. Everything that is left unsaid in this scene is so good. All the little looks that they give each other, the proximity they have to each other is really, really good. This is one of my favorite scenes in the movie. Yet another moment where Jules has the answer. We, the audience, know that she knows not only that she knows what to do, but that this is the time. He is practically on that boat. I think at this time in the movie, he's having some doubts about whether he really wants to go through with Mary and Kimmy. And he is practically begging her, tell me how you feel about me right now. He says something about, like, you know, she says if you love somebody, you should say it instead of letting the moment pass you by. And for some reason, the visual cue of them passing under the bridge,
the shadow hits them.
Yeah. And she breaks eye contact with it. Like, that's the perfect, that would have been the perfect rom-com moment under the cover of darkness, which randomly comes by to steal a kiss. That would have been the perfect rom-com moment. But instead she turns away and yet again is a coward and can't bring herself to do it. It's actually a great character moment. Like, I love this, how she fails yet again. And something about the emotion and the vulnerability here, and the notable, the palpable frustration that Michael has, I feel, in the scene. I think at this point in the movie, he's still jealous from her having brought George around. And he's inviting just, you know, give me a reason to have a doubt here.
Yep.
Give me anything. And she won't, she can't bring herself to say anything. It's tragic.
Yeah.
And I think it's a very beautiful scene.
I agree. I love it. I think it's really tender and sweet when he starts to sing their song and they just dance together.
The Way You Look Tonight.
Yeah. It's
beautiful.
It's really a really touching and tender moment. I left this off in the hopes that you would pick it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was surprised that you omitted this, actually.
Yeah. What's your next scene?
My next one is probably, it's a small thing. I just had to include it. Paul Giamatti.
Okay. So that's part of my scene. Okay. So I'm including that in when Michael and Jules go back to the hotel. Did you know, we'll jump ahead. Do you know that Jordan didn't recognize him when she watched it?
What?
That? Yes.
No way.
That's
crazy.
When she watched it, instantly. I sent the message. I'm like, what about Paul Giamatti? And she's like, he was in this? And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about?
I'm instantly, the second he's on screen, I'm like, what the fuck, Paul Giamatti?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was elated. So I was elated to see him on screen.
So this came out, when this came out, I had no connection to Paul Giamatti. Mm-hmm. My first real love for Paul Giamatti comes in a movie that came out this year called Private Parts, the Howard Stern movie.
Okay.
Where he plays a character named Pig Vomit. Mm-hmm. And he fucking rules in it. He does everything you want a Paul Giamatti character to do. So in the subsequent years, since I've grown to love and admire the genius of Paul Giamatti, when I rewatch this movie, it fills me with such joy when this scene comes.
He's so fucking good, even in this one scene. I don't even think he has much of a script. Like, I would love for him to have, like, this scene could have had some real meat to it. Just to have a random stranger pass by and give Jules a moment of kindness is such a beautiful moment in this chaotic, crazy, evil movie.
Because she's just committed something even more evil than she has than earlier in the movie. That fucking email thing is evil.
It's pure fucking evil. And to have this random bellhop pass by, see that she's having a bad day, and just offer her a kind word, give her a pass on smoking in the hallway, which is fucking insane, by the way, that you could smoke in hotels. I mean, that you could smoke on certain floors in hotels in the 90s. I'm sure laws varied from state to state. That was a bit surreal. But to have, I really did think part of it is that it's Paul Giamatti, so it gets points just by seeing this man's face. Part of it is that they lucked out and got a superb actor, got a future Oscar winner in this role. Future Oscar, he won the Oscar this time around, right? No? Future Oscar nominee. Fuck. Unfortunately. But yeah, the fact that they lucked out and got somebody who would go on to become just a phenomenal actor and have a great career. And yeah, also just the fact that it has been pure evil. This movie has been very evil to this point. And then just this passing ship in the night gives her kind of a pat on the back of there, everything's going to be all right.
Absolutely incredible act of kindness.
Yeah. And
sympathy and empathy.
Yeah. And then just gives her a wave and goes on his way. I'm so happy. This is easily the kind of scene that an editor can cut from a movie. Like, oh, the scene with the bellhop that takes 2 minutes, like, it doesn't go anywhere. Just cut it. It's nothing. I'm so glad this made it into the movie.
Me too.
It's very emotional for me.
Yeah. I love it. I absolutely love it. Yeah. So I have it in here as well. I don't need to get into the intricacies of that. She does something fucking evil and it finally works. And when it does, she feels nothing but guilt. She realizes she's fucked up.
Which is a positive thing.
Yeah.
I guess we're growing.
Yeah. But that's her, because when she realizes that her plan worked, not quite, because the email wasn't supposed to get out. She was trying to show Michael the email, but the email ends up getting sent. When it happens and everything she wanted to happen has now, she is so racked with guilt. So that's her living with her choices outside in the hallway. Mm-hmm. And she is given a moment of reprieve by Paul Giamatti. Yeah. And then she's brought back to reality when the door opens. Yeah.
Is this where he sucks the ring off her finger?
Yep.
Weird. Didn't like it.
Yeah. While that might be able to get the ring off, I am really close. Like, my two closest female friends are Pandora and Mushhead. And while neither one of them would ever be so evil as to do something like this, mm-hmm. and the very idea of putting on somebody else's wedding ring is also a fucking cunt thing to do. Mm-hmm. I have shared rooms and even I've shared a bed with Mushhead, not in a sexual way. We've slept in the same bed mm-hmm. on road trips. I would never suck a ring off her finger.
Yeah, that's
that is beyond.
She doesn't even go like, hey, it's a little bit weird, but I have a trick that might work. He's yeah. straight up like, oh, let me get that for you.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah. That
it's
is
very weird.
Extremely sexual. Yeah. Yeah, no. No. That would never, ever occur to me.
Yeah. So that was kind of weird.
Yeah. But I'd be like, there's probably some lotion or soap in the bathroom. We could probably get this off.
Well, we could work with this together.
Yeah.
Anybody got some butter?
Yeah. Okay. What's next for you?
I just have the ending, the saying goodbye.
Okay, I have the wedding reception. Mm. So I'm going to start with her giving her speech until the end.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay.
I will just insert briefly here. 0% chance this bitch is coming to my wedding. After everything that's happened, nope. Not only are you not giving the speech, but you are not invited.
Yeah.
Get out.
Big time.
Yeah.
Because we're not even going to get into everything that happens between this and all that. So her speech is great. She loans them her and Michael's song. I love the sentiment, and it actually truly does affect me. But there's no – Kimmy's probably like, you can go fuck yourself in this song.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck you, bitch, for everything you've done.
Yeah, I don't want your fucking song.
I don't want your fucking hand-me-downs.
Yeah.
I got the man.
Yeah, I'm good. We'll find one. Yeah. There's other songs.
It is. But what I love about this is the movie makes it work because Julia, at this point, the character Jules, has done everything she can to atone for what she's done. She has apologized. She has come clean to Michael. She's admitted her wrongdoing. She's the one that found Kimmy, admitted to what she's done, and said, you won. Like, I tried, you won. Does that mean that she should be at the wedding? No. But she has atoned as best she can, and she sells this moment in her speech. Mm-hmm. And what I love is that in reality, it would never be this way, Cameron Diaz sells it on her end. Because when she's giving this speech and she says, you know, this is on loan from you, Cameron Diaz is emotional. She's not angry as she should be in real life. She's actually genuinely touched by this moment. And because the two actors are doing such a good job, I'm willing to forgo the reality of that moment and buy into the emotion of it.
That's fine.
So it gets me mm-hmm. deeply. What I also love is, again, Dermot Mulroney's reaction. He knows what Jules giving this song to them means, and he sells the moment as well. And that's why this moment, almost every time I watch it, almost makes me cry every time, and a few times it has. After the reception, Kimmy and Michael are leaving. Jules gets stuck in the crowd and feels that she didn't get a chance to say goodbye, and she turns and walks away, and Michael has come. They exchange no words. He hugs her and then just says bye. And that bye means the world to Jules. You can interpret it in whatever ways you want. But for me, it just solidified their friendship. He knows that he left without saying goodbye to his best friend. And that was unacceptable. So he comes back and says goodbye to her. That is another moment I always love. But then we get to the great ending that this movie deserved, the character Jules does not deserve, but she gets it. She gets a phone call. George is on the other line trying to comfort her, and comforts her in a way that makes her start to wonder how incredibly intelligent this man must be, and then realizes that he is there somewhere. And it is a very fun play as George describes exactly what she's doing with innuendo until it reveals that he is there. They have a really great moment, and George once again proves what an incredibly great friend he is to someone that doesn't deserve it.
She does not deserve comfort in this moment.
No.
But he gives it to her.
Yeah.
Because he's selfless.
Yeah.
And sees his friend in pain.
Yeah. Because he is a great friend.
Yeah.
Where Jules is a narcissistic sociopath piece of shit.
Yeah, that's right.
And the movie ends with her and her gay best friend.
Yeah. Do I have anything else I want to add on this section? I don't think so. I don't know. There's something about... you've seen this movie far more times than I.
Yeah, I've seen this movie a lot.
I think that one-word bye at the end, a part of me has to wonder... I wonder how their friendship has survived this long at all. I wonder how their friendship survives this. I wonder if this is farewell.
I 100% could understand people taking it that way, and I would 100%... I could agree. I get it. I think that is a very valid interpretation of that bye. Yeah.
That's how it felt to me in the moment. But yeah, I can see where you're coming from on that. But yeah, again, George proving, what a great dude he is. He deserves so much better than a dance with her.
Very true. Yeah. All right. What's your favorite scene?
Shit, man. There's some really good ones. You know what? I think the one that felt the most emotional to me, honestly, is them on the boat together.
Oh,
that,
I like
that
it.
That's a beautiful moment that the two of them share.
I never saw that coming.
Yeah.
I fucking love it. This was a tough choice for me, but I'm going to go with the karaoke bar.
Wow, that's also a surprise to me.
Kimmy winning over the crowd, and with a unknown to her, fuck you to Jules in the moment is great. Dermot Mulroney's reaction and Kimmy just rising to the occasion. It always makes me laugh. It makes me feel good. The ending is really fucking close to me. But I always have a great time watching the karaoke scene. And I won't lie. Part of it is when she starts singing and that background person yells, "You suck." It makes me laugh every single time.
Yeah.
All right. Noms and nods. Start us off.
Okay, well, let's go with the big lady herself, Julia Roberts. I think that this is a fantastic performance, a great follow-up. Again, I didn't see any of the stinkers in between this and Pretty Woman. Other than Hook. but nonetheless, this is a natural continuation from that performance, I think. You can call it a spiritual descendant of that performance, but it's very good. I'm looking at leading actress right now. We have Helen Hunt for As Good As It Gets, Helena Bonham Carter for The Wings of a Dove, Julie Christie, Afterglow, Judi Dench, Mrs. Brown, Kate Winslet, Titanic. I've only seen two. I am not taking out either.
Yeah.
But if I get a free slot, she's going in there.
You got a free slot.
Yeah.
I've seen four of them. Mm-hmm. So the only one I haven't seen yet is Judi Dench and Mrs. Brown, and I'm going to rectify that before we get to the end, because I think that's the only performance I haven't seen yet. Oh, no. Nope, never mind. I got a couple others, but those are coming soon. I'll easily punt Julie Christie.
Punter.
Yeah. That I truly don't understand how that performance got nominated. Not that it's bad. It's just not best. Not even close.
You know what I love about Julia Roberts' performance? In addition to the range, which, by the way, when she's laying there in the hotel hallway, distraught with an uncharacteristic moment of remorse. when she's sitting there, she plays that to perfection.
Mm-hmm.
But I also, her laugh is so good. She has a great cackle in this movie. She has a really good cackle. And I really like that as well. So she has quite a lot of range. And she plays both sides of it really well.
Yeah, I have no problem with that nomination. Yeah. I'm going to go with Rupert Everett, supporting actor.
Hell yeah. All right.
So you weren't here for it, but I actually rewatched As Good As It Gets.
Oh, so what do we think of Greg Kinnear in retrospect?
Worthy.
Okay, cool.
Yeah,
so that complicates things.
It does. It does, because he was my go-to kickout.
Yeah.
I still truly feel that out of the five, he is number five, but it's not as shocking a nomination as I was really leading myself to believe. Mm. That being said, I'm always a fan of trying to include comedic performances. So I am going to slot Rupert Everett in here.
Yeah, that's great.
Over Greg Kinnear.
Keeping the number of gay characters consistent in this category, that's great.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. You've seen one,
I've
two,
seen,
four. You've seen four.
I've seen four of them, and I'm going to see the fifth 2 weeks
from
now.
2 weeks.
2 weeks from now, yeah. It's close. I honestly don't remember Greg Kinnear's performance that well.
Okay.
That leads me to believe I should probably boot it out.
Okay.
Part of it is the writing of this character, but part of it is this actor is killing it. Sorry, his name again is?
Rupert Everett.
Rupert Everett is absolutely killing it.
Yeah.
And I think one of the best moments of his performance is him delighting, him being disappointed and confused by his friend involving him unwittingly in her hijinks.
Yep.
But then being delighted at the opportunity to fuck with her just a little bit.
Yep.
is a great moment of friendship, and his performance sells that completely. I have no problem with you inserting him. I'd put him in there too.
Sweet. Yeah. Awesome. Do you have anything else?
Moving on from those to the only person who actually was nominated from this movie. That was James Newton Howard.
For the score.
Yeah, for the score. So back then we were doing Best Original Dramatic Score and Best Original Musical or Comedy Score. This was nominated alongside The Full Monty, Anastasia, As Good As It Gets, Men in Black, and My Best Friend's Wedding. Oh, that's this. I admittedly didn't really notice the score on the first watch, but I re-listened to it today. And it's very enjoyable on its own merits.
Nice.
And I rewatched a couple of the scenes in particular. I rewatched the boat scene, and the score really swells there. I really like this nomination. Granted, there's 10 slots instead of 5, just because there's two categories. So if we were doing today's rules with one category, there's no chance it beats out any of James Horner, John Williams, Danny Elfman, Philip Glass, Jerry Goldsmith. Fuck, what a year for a dramatic score.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's not better than
and
any
And you still
of those.
Haven't listened to Amistad's score.
I haven't, but it's John Williams, so I assume it's spectacular. Yeah, all of those scores are phenomenal.
What did we think? Did we like the Kundin score?
We liked the Kundin score.
Okay.
I liked it at least.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. I remember thinking it was one of the best things in that movie. But yeah, good score. Not on the level of those ones, but like for a 90s rom-com score, really good.
Okay. I just recently listened to the Men in Black score from last week.
Yeah.
It's not beating that.
So, oh, really? It's really good?
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. I'm going to throw in screenplay.
Okay. Go ahead.
So this is an original screenplay. So the nominees are Good Will Hunting, As Good As It Gets, Boogie Nights, Deconstructing Harry by Woody Allen, and The Full Monty. I'll take out Deconstructing Harry.
Okay.
Yeah.
You have seen it?
I have. Oh, yeah. Yep.
Got a 2, I assume.
Sure did.
Because Woody Allen.
Uh-huh. He is a whiny, narcissistic fuckwad.
Oh, playing against type?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that screenplay can fuck right off, and I'll happily put this in there.
I have seen 4 of these. I have not seen Deconstructing Harry, and it does not make it in over any of those. Yeah, there's a couple of contrivances, and it's mostly good, and the dialogue is mostly good. There's a couple of plot contrivances in there which are able to be looked past, but do still exist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm leaving.
I just don't like Woody Allen's.
Yeah, that's great.
So I'm happy.
You've been clear on the topic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Anything else for you?
No, that's it for me.
I wanted to give a shout out to Cameron Diaz.
Sure.
But then I forgot the supporting actress race this year. She's not getting in.
Supporting actress Kim Basinger, Joan Cusack, Minnie Driver, Julianne Moore, Gloria Stewart. I have seen 4, and she's staying out of there.
Yeah. I don't think you'd take out Joan Cusack.
Okay.
Yeah. I know that you have a special place in your heart
for
her.
I've just been told that all your children are missing.
That's all I have for noms and nods.
Yeah, me too.
Cool. Oh, favorite quotes. I don't even have them lined up. Okay. Our favorite quotes. Here we go. Starting with Manny's nominees, my first nominee for favorite quote is coming right now.
I think I'm gonna cry.
Me too.
George, this is so sweet of you to come to our rehearsal. I insist you stay on to lunch.
Oh, yes.
No, absolutely.
Love to. Love the bag, love the shoes, love everything. Love to.
Thank you.
Darling, what about your flight?
Cancelled.
And my next nominee.
You know, my grandmother always said, this too shall pass.
My next nominee.
Oh, I'm better with food. Okay. You're Michael. You're in a fancy French restaurant. You order creme brulee for dessert. It's beautiful. It's sweet. It's irritatingly perfect. Suddenly, Michael realizes he doesn't want creme brulee. He wants something else. What does he want?
Jell-O.
Jell-O? Why does he want Jell-O?
Because he's comfortable with Jell-O. Jell-O makes him comfortable. I realize compared to creme brulee, it's Jell-O, but maybe that's what he needs.
I could be Jell-O.
No. Creme brulee can never be Jell-O. You could never be Jell-O.
I have to be Jell-O.
You're never gonna be Jell-O. Now, you need to come clean with your parents, because if you're waiting for that, do you take this man part? It's considered poor form.
I
and
love
my
him.
Next nominee.
Now let's hear from the maid of honor, the lovely Julianne.
I had the strangest dream. I dreamt that some psychopath was trying to break the two of you up. Luckily, I woke up and I see that the world is just as it should be. For my best friend has won the best woman. I didn't get you a gift. However, this is on loan until you two find your soul.
First nominee.
I'm speechless.
Well, that's Jules.
Yeah. Hey, congratulations.
What?
I told him, puppy. I mean, if we're engaged, we really shouldn't be ashamed of it. He's racing back to New York. He just came in for a few hours to fuck me.
Takes a few hours.
Sam's next nominee.
Oh my God, race you to the altar.
Underplay.
Got it. Hey! I'm Jules' fiance, George. Just in time for a quick pre-conjugal visit, if you catch my drift.
I do.
You're gonna humiliate me, aren't you?
Only if I can.
Sam's next nominee.
What?
Just tell him you love him.
Ugh.
Julianne, tell him you've loved him for 9 years, but that you're afraid of love. Yeah, tell him you're afraid of love, afraid of needing.
Needing what?
To belong to someone. We all ask, we are. I'm sorry about that. Tell him this is the worst, the cruelest, the dumbest moment to do this to him, but there it is. He's got to choose.
Tell him the actual truth?
Maybe not the actual truth. Highlights.
Sam's next nominee.
It's not.
She double crossed me. The little twerp.
Next weekend,
she comes to my eye, self-absorbed, innately lovable. We deserve each other. I'm running out of time. I'm completely out of sneaky ideas. I have come to the end of my rapidly fraying rope. George.
And Sam's last nominee.
Hello, George.
Hey, gorgeous. Having a good time?
Not particularly, but I did what I came to do.
What, you spit them up?
No, I said goodbye.
Good girl. I'm proud of you. I'd be prouder still if you were dancing.
I have big plans for dancing. Just give me 30, 35 years.
Oh, the misery, the exquisite tragedy, the Susan Hayward of it all. I can just picture you there, sitting alone at your table in your lavender gown.
Did I tell you my gown was lavender?
Hair swept up, haven't touched your cake. Mm. Probably drumming your fingernails on the white linen tablecloth, where you do when you're really feeling down. Perhaps even looking at those nails, thinking, God, I should have stopped in all my evil plotting to have that manicure. But it's too late now.
George, I didn't tell you my dress was lavender.
Suddenly, a familiar song.
The moment I wake up before you go.
Then you're off your chair, one exquisite movement. Wandering, searching, sniffing the wind like a dappled deer. Has God heard your little prayer? Will Cinderella dance again? And then, suddenly, the crowds part. And there he is. Sleek, stylish, radiant with charisma. Bizarrely, he's on the telephone. But then, so are you. And he comes towards you. The moves of a jungle cat. And although you quite correctly sense that he is, like most devastatingly handsome single men of his age are, you think, what the hell? Life goes on. Maybe there won't be marriage. Maybe there won't be sex. But by God, there'll be dancing.
Up our nominees.
I'm so glad you included the whole thing on that
for
last
favorite
one.
Me too.
So worth it.
Yeah, it is worth it. Sam, your favorite quote.
In spite of the inclusion of the entire thing, I enjoy the he came in for just a few hours to fuck me takes a few hours. I enjoy the heat, you know, like there's a snappiness to that line, you know. It's just like it's so quippy. It's so good.
I want to admit to something to you here.
Yeah.
I'm still kind of deciding. I'm kind of between two, so I'm going to mm-hmm. use this. I was actually going to have six quotes.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to go over my limit. And what I was going to do was I figured since you and I's passion and admiration for Paul Giamatti, I could include his quote and you wouldn't complain
yeah.
that I threw in the extra quote.
Oh, yeah, and you'd Giamatti. Be absolutely correct.
I was like, I bet you if I throw in Giamatti's quote, I can get five plus a Giamatti extra.
Yeah, and did you? I didn't even – I'm not counting over here.
I didn't. I wanted to stay true, but I won't lie. All throughout my editing, I was like, I kind of want to do it. And then afterwards
– You would have gotten a pass, but honor system.
Honor system. Okay, so for me, it's kind of down to two. I've always loved the line, love the shoe, love the bag, love the shoes, love everything, love two.
There is a special delight, by the way, for all the listeners here. Being across from any listening to these, he's mouthing along to every single one. It's just purely delightful. And he does the bag, the shoes with the hand gesture. It's great.
But I think I need to go with the phone call as my winner. Because it always leaves me so on such a happy note at the end of the movie.
It's a great speech.
It is a great speech. So I'm going to go with the phone call.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah,
awesome. What was the weak link of the film?
Gosh, let me think about that for a second, actually.
I got one for you if you want.
Yeah, okay, give it to me.
Okay, for me, it's the timeline. and I mentioned it earlier. Mm-hmm. Best friends don't talk.
Yeah.
He's getting married, calls her 5 days before the wedding's going to happen to tell her to rush out. That, for me, has always been the weakest part. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no way that I'm lucky. I'm very lucky. I actually have quite a few people that I'm able to call my best friends. And when I did get married, each and every one of them was standing next to me on my big day. Mm-hmm. There's no way none of them knew that I was even that I wasn't dating somebody. And that they were, like, within the first 10 people I called when I proposed. Mm-hmm. The ones that weren't there, because I did a public proposal. I did a public proposal.
Oh, see.
Not like at like a baseball game on the screen, but I did it at...
Honestly, that wouldn't be that off-brand for you, but...
I would never do that.
Yeah.
That's... Well, yeah. I've always liked it.
While you're a baseball fan, you are also a considerate person in spite of all the talk of narcissism that you have. So yes. You would not do that to your spouse.
I did it at Canada Day Barbecue at my house. And... It was an incredible day, and nobody knew I was asking.
Wow.
Nobody knew.
You didn't tell anybody?
Nope. Wow. The only person that knew was a friend of mine, and he knew because he's who I got the ring with, because he owns Fifth Avenue Jewelers. So I had to tell
you
him.
You little softy. You're such a romantic.
You want? I'm going to go on a little tangent.
Let's
here.
Go. I love it.
I'm going to tell this story. So the day of the barbecue, I know I'm asking this day. I have everything planned. I made sure all of Julie's sisters were there. All of my best friends that could make it were there. And my mom was there. Maybe about an hour. And I knew when I was going to ask. But an hour before I was going to ask, we ran out, I think, of some ice or something. And so I'm like, I'll go get it. And my mom said, I'll come with you. And as we're driving back, we're just about to park. She goes, are you okay? And I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, there's something off about you today. I'm like, no, I'm good. And she goes, are you going to propose today? And I look at her, I'm like, what? And she's like, are you going to propose today? I was like, how did you fucking know that? And she's like, I don't know. She's like, I just had this feeling. I'm like, yes, I am. What the fuck?
Moms, man.
Yeah.
Moms are undefeated all time.
It ended up working out well for me, because now that my mom knew, I could get her to help me. So I got my mom to record the proposal with my phone.
That's so great, man.
It was a really great day, and it was awesome because nobody knew. And there's lots of really great things. Like, we took a lot of pictures that day, and there's a picture of me. I went into the house to get the ring, and so it's in my pocket, but it's in the box. So I have my hand in my pocket over top of the box, so you can't see the shape of the box in my pocket. Mm-hmm. And there's a picture of me literally coming out the front door and Julie sitting on the front steps. And you can't see the box, but I know. So I've always loved that picture, because I'm looking down at her. And in my mind, I'm like, you have no idea that 3 feet away from you is your engagement ring.
Yeah, that's
and
crazy.
I'm like 10 minutes away from asking you. Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was a really great day.
That is a great story. That's
thanks.
Awesome.
Yeah. That being said, the timeline, them not speaking, her not even knowing he's dating somebody, that he's getting married in 5 days, that's fucked up.
You know what? I do agree that that's fucked up. It honestly didn't bother me as much as what I think is going to be my real answer,
okay.
Which is the lack of a redemption for Jules's character. I'm not convinced. I'm not adequately convinced that she becomes a better person in the end.
I
realize
I don't think she's a better person.
There's the scene that we didn't even talk about at Kamitsky in the bathroom.
Oh,
where she says you won. To me, that's such like a non-apology. It's such a non-apology scene. She just like says she doesn't say what's the big deal, but it kind of comes off as like, what's the big deal? Like, you won in the end anyway. So like, it doesn't matter that I did all this shitty stuff and almost got your fiance fired and like tried to steal him on your wedding day. It kind of comes off that way to me.
So lack of a redemption.
Yeah. I don't necessarily need her to like be fully forgiven and everything. I kind of like to believe that she's never forgiven for any of this, 'cause she does some pretty unforgivable shit. But I don't know. Something about it just comes off as like, I would love for this person to at least come away from this movie with an understanding, like, oh boy, I did some pretty fucked up stuff. Like, I need to really work on myself.
That's fair.
But I didn't get that.
Totally fair.
Yeah.
You ready for some trivia?
Yeah, let's do it.
Not a lot there. The wedding dress worn in the opening credits, so the song
yes.
that opens the song, is the same wedding dress worn by Jennifer Aniston's character, Rachel Green, in Friends.
That is a really weird connection.
Yeah. Michael often calls Julianne by her nickname, Jules, which, coincidentally, is Julia Roberts' nickname in real life.
That is funny.
Yeah. And then this is what you talked about. John Corbett appeared in the original ending of the film, but because the director wanted to bring back Rupert Everett's character, the scene was reshot with Everett taking Corbett's place. I also heard that test audiences did not want her to have a guy at the end. So
she's got some growing to do before yeah. she gets into anything.
That's all I have for trivia, but I got some good casting stuff.
Okay.
Julia Roberts handpicked both Dermot Mulroney and Cameron Diaz for this film.
Wow.
Drew Barrymore read for the role of Kimberly, but lost out to Cameron Diaz when Julia Roberts suggested Diaz for the part instead. P.J. Hogan wanted Russell Crowe to play the part of Michael, but the table read between Russell and Crowe and Julia Roberts went so poorly that the idea was abandoned.
Wow.
Sarah Jessica Parker was originally offered the role of Julianne, but she was not able to take the role because she was committed to HBO to play Carrie Bradshaw in Sex and the City.
Well, that worked out for her.
Mm-hmm. Dermot Mulroney was cast as Michael after Edward Burns turned it down.
Who's Edward Burns?
Ryback from Saving Private Ryan.
Yes, got it.
Yeah. Laura Dern was also considered to play Kimberly. And Calista Flockhart turned down the role of both Julianne and Kimberly. Yeah. All right, closing credits. Would you watch this movie again?
Yeah, I would.
I 100% would, yeah. Would you recommend this movie to friends?
Yes. Not a blanket recommendation, but for somebody looking for, like, basically... they watched Pretty Woman and they want more of Julia Roberts. Like, that's that.
Anybody looking that likes rom-coms, this is an easy recommendation. Mm-hmm. MVP of the film.
In spite of all the shitting I did on the character, the performance by Julia Roberts is exceptional.
Rupert Everett.
Is fantastic. Yeah. No complaints.
Yeah. Recommend a good double feature.
Okay, so I really wanted to go off base with this. There's a movie I watched, a 2023 film with Alison Brie I watched called Somebody I Used to Know.
Mm-hmm.
My main takeaway from watching My Best Friend's Wedding, or one of my main takeaways, is that this Somebody I Used to Know movie borrowed heavily from this. I was like, oh, this is... there are many plot points that are borrowed beat for beat from My Best Friend's Wedding.
Wow.
And if memory serves, there's even a line in that movie where one of the characters goes like, what are you here to do at my best friend's wedding on me? Or something like that.
Interesting. What's the movie called?
It's called Somebody I Used to Know. It's with Alison Brie, and I can't remember the male lead's name.
Okay.
But basically, a woman returns to her hometown. She's like a busy career woman, returns to her hometown, reconnects with an old beau of hers who's now getting married. And she's still close with, or still somewhat close with his family. And they invite her to the wedding. And she decides, oh, I'm not done with you yet. I'm going to break up your wedding.
Interesting.
The problem with why I can't actually make that my real answer for double feature is because the movie's not that good. I know. It sounds really interesting. It's got like a 2.7 on Letterboxd. I gave it a 3. I wish I had pulled up my 2023 list. Maybe I can get to it real quick if I talk slow enough. All 2023 ranked. Yeah, of my... it's not that bad. I gave it 3 stars. It's like reasonably good. Of the 38 2023 movies I watched, I gave it a 3. It's 31st. So it's not great. It's not bad, but it is at a 2.7 on Letterboxd. Right. So I can't in good faith make that my double feature just because it has a failing grade, or it has a bad grade, let's
yeah,
say.
Yeah, that's
on
fair.
Letterboxd. The real answer, I think, is I've referenced it a couple times. Pretty Woman. Watch this with Pretty Woman and have yourself a wonderful Julia Roberts night.
That is a good one. So I've got 3 considerations, and my 4th is the answer.
Okay.
So my first consideration is the one that actually first came to my mind: 4 Weddings and a Funeral.
Yeah. For some reason, that came to my head too. I think part of it is the hatred that I had for Andie MacDowell's character in that movie. Hated her. But yeah, that's a really good pick.
Okay. Another one. Let's go with the wedding theme: Palm Springs.
Sweet. Love that too.
Yeah. The third one. Obvious answer. Not as obvious as yours. When Harry Met Sally.
You know what's so funny is I think I mentioned to you off air, Emma and I just got back from Vancouver. We were there for a few days. Mm-hmm. We turned on the TV in our hotel room when Harry Met Sally playing there.
Oh.
So then the following day, we watch a movie about a close male-female friendship, which may or may not, which like has romantic undercurrent to it. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, this reminds me a lot of When Harry Met Sally. So I think that's a great pick, 100%.
Awesome. But my answer is Notting Hill.
Which I haven't seen, actually.
Yeah, it's we will be reviewing it for 99.
Okay, okay.
So what order are you watching your movies in?
We will do My Best Friend's Wedding first.
Okay.
Yes. And close with the good one.
All right. I'm going to go My Best Friend's Wedding first and Notting Hill second.
Okay.
I'm excited that you haven't seen Notting Hill.
I haven't.
It's a 99.
I actually know very little about it.
That's even better.
I want to say it's one of the sexy British guys, like Hugh Grant maybe, but...
Nailed it.
Okay, cool.
What will be this film's legacy?
So I am told, one of the great rom-coms of the 90s.
Yes. Definitely. I also have this down as Julia Roberts' reemergence.
Yeah.
Kind of saved her career. Did you learn anything from this movie?
When you love somebody, say it. I was so frustrated with Julia Roberts' character so many times in this movie. So when you love somebody, just say it.
Yeah. That's basically what mine one is as well. I threw in two extra ones here for you.
Okay.
We've been hinting. We've kind of been dodging around it all night. So let's just flat out saying it. Do Jules and Michael stay friends?
I like to believe they don't. I think ultimately they're not good for each other. I don't think this friendship is beneficial to either of them anymore. And I think they're both better people apart. So I like to believe this bye at the end is farewell.
I agree. I don't think they stay friends. I think everything she's done is unconscionable and unforgivable, especially to Kimmy.
Yes. Yeah. You, even if he did want to remain friends with her, which I don't think he should because he almost got her fired, but even if he did forgive and forget and want to move on.
As a lot of guys are prone to.
Yes. Yeah. I don't think that this woman having slighted your wife, she really did a number on your wife.
Yeah.
And it's not up to you whether you forgive her. It's also up to your wife.
Yep.
So, yeah.
My second question, do Kimmy and Michael stay together?
They have some shit to work through. I think they have shown that they're willing to work with each other. I'm not saying that I think their relationship is perfect. And I think they will have problems in their marriage. But they've both shown in a brief time their willingness to kind of give and take. And, like, Kimmy receding when she was making a maneuver, let's say, for him to get a better job, and she realized it was really hurting him, she instantly was like, whoa, okay, I clearly made a mistake, and instantly admitted her wrongdoing. It's things like that which go a long way in a relationship, I think. So, I believe these kids can make it happen, but they'll have some problems.
I like that. I like the optimist. Mm-hmm. I feel like they won't.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think this damaged them.
Yeah, it did. It definitely did damage them.
Yeah. I'm going to go with a no. Hmm. Huh. I just thought I'd throw in a couple extra
ones.
That is
interesting. I like that.
Yeah. Sam, your final thoughts on My Best Friend's Wedding.
Yeah, so this movie basically came down to how much am I willing to forgive? how much am I willing to forgive Jules? I would have loved for this to have ended more on a reflective note, let's say. On a note of her realizing, like, I seriously just endangered my friend's happiness and his marriage. I need to take a long, hard look at myself. I'm glad that... God, am I ever glad that they did not wind up together. I cannot express to you how much I was not rooting for these two to get together through the duration of this movie. So there was a lot of tough moments in the movie for me where I'm just simply not rooting for our protagonist, which isn't always a necessity anyway, but it did hamper my enjoyment at times. Luckily Julia Roberts is electric and gives one of the best performances that I've seen her in, certainly, and a number of other good supporting performances as well from the people that we mentioned before. A couple of screenplay contrivances also weigh this movie down a little bit. I wanted to like this movie so much more than I did. I can totally see, having seen this movie in 97, why this connects with some people so deeply. Especially because there's at least three very good scenes, in my opinion. There's a number of very good scenes. In particular, I'm thinking of the ending scene, the little 2-minute Paul Giamatti cameo, which I'm sure a lot of people wouldn't include, but I'm going to. And I don't know, the lobster dinner. I don't know. There's a number of good ones. Let's put it that way. Or the lobster lunch, excuse me. Yeah, a good movie with problems. Let's leave it there.
All right. I love this movie. This movie brings me nothing but joy every time I watch it. The character of George just makes me happy. Cameron Diaz in a delightful performance, and Julia Roberts absolutely fucking killing it. And like I said, at the time, reminding us why she was a movie star. This movie, again, holds a special place in my heart because it was one of the movies I went and saw when Pandora and I first started becoming friends. And so every time I watch this movie, I think of her. And that just makes me happy to think of one of my best friends. I think the movie still makes me laugh. The movie rings out some, at times, some pretty deep emotions from me, depending on the way I'm feeling. It'll either almost make me cry or it will make me cry. And I'm willing to forgive a lot of the contrivances because the movie's been in my life for so long and holds a special place in my heart. So I have no problem overlooking a lot of the problems within this movie because of my enjoyment and what it means to me personally.
Can I just say something?
Yeah.
We're reaching the end of the podcast here. I'm about 90% sure that in this movie, or in the review for this movie, I should say, you and I have not uttered the word baseball yet. Which is pretty impressive, I gotta say, for a movie that has not one but two scenes in a baseball stadium.
Yeah.
And is about a sports journalist.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive for us. Yeah. I just wanna say.
I will say this. It was one of the scenes I knocked off, so I'll take the moment now.
Yeah.
When they first go to Comiskey Park.
By the way, Comiskey is distinct from Guaranteed Rate Field, I think.
No, like, it's not.
They're the same park?
It is the same park. Okay. I will always call wherever the White Sox play Comiskey.
Yeah.
I will. I just always will.
Yeah.
So it's not Comiskey Park. It is. I can't remember what it was called back then. It might have been Comiskey. But not Comiskey.
What do you mean it's not Comiskey? Like the...
Where they're playing?
Yes.
Is the rebuilt new Chicago White Sox stadium.
Got it. Understood.
So okay. Comiskey... got torn down.
Yeah.
This is where they moved in.
Understood. Okay. I think I was reading through the Wikipedia plot synopsis earlier. I'm pretty sure it does refer to it as Comiskey in that synopsis.
Maybe it is Comiskey, but it just looks too new.
I'm not sure. Yeah.
Anyways, that being said, when they're there, there's a scene. She's holding a tray of drinks. And she's like, I've got moves you never heard of. Hot as fuck.
Yeah. It's very cute.
Hot.
She's wearing a couple like belly shirts in this.
Crop tops.
A couple crop tops, yeah.
They are delicious.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Also, just got to give a shout out because they mention Blue Jays legend Frank Thomas in that scene.
Legend?
I thought you'd like that.
Fuck off.
Thought you'd like that.
Horrible. So I've always enjoyed this movie. I will continue to enjoy this movie. It just makes me happy. Time to give this movie a rating. Sam, what you got for Best Friend's Wedding?
This happens sometimes where I just want to say this has been a fantastic podcast. Like, this has been a very fun one. There's been many giggles. And sometimes when that happens, I feel inclined to, you know, add on some rating points. I'm going to, against the emotions that I'm feeling right now, I'm confident this is a 3-star movie for me.
All right.
I am confident of that. It's been a 5-star podcast. So it almost got an extra point there, but we're leaving it at 3 for right now.
I was getting excited. I'm like, holy cow. Yeah. This is a 4.
Yeah.
Easy 4 for me. It just, you know, I honestly don't have an explanation on why I don't give this a 5, because this movie does make me so happy, and I'll happily put it on at any point of the time that I ever want to watch something. But for some reason, I just can't give it the 5. But it's easy 4.
Yeah.
Sam, what's next week?
Manny, how is it possible that Il Postino is not the worst movie called The Postman? Episode 294, we're going to be talking about the Kevin Costner written, directed, produced, starred in?
Ooh, okay.
Question mark?
Directed?
Yeah.
Starred?
Yeah.
Is for sure.
Written and produced, question mark?
I don't believe that he's a writer.
Okay.
So let's find out. Oop. All right.
Let's find out.
Producing, probably. Mm-hmm. Not a writer.
Not a writer. Okay. Well, he saves face there.
Wow. That's unfortunate.
What's up?
If I'm not mistaken, yeah, there it is.
Manny just pulled up the IMDb for Brian Helgeland, I think.
Yeah. Oops. Let's do this. He has written these films. Okay, so some of them are good. He wrote Robin Hood, not The Prince of Thieves. Mm-hmm. He wrote the one with Russell Crowe. Also wrote Man on Fire. Okay. He did the adaptation of Mystic River.
Fantastic.
Okay. He wrote A Knight's Tale.
Great.
Yeah.
Great movie.
He wrote L.A. Confidential. He also wrote a horrible movie called Assassins that is so much fun with Sylvester Stallone and Antonio Banderas.
Okay.
But he did also write The Postman.
Okay. But he has not sole writer, right? Like
No, it's him, Eric Roth.
Wow.
Who I'm pretty sure has two Oscars. Just one. Sorry, just one.
Wow.
The writer of Dune.
Yep.
The writer of The Curious Case of Benjamin Button. The writer of Killers of the Flower Moon.
Holy shit, man.
Yeah. These are the writers on the epic, and by epic, the 2-hour and 57-minute
fuck me
Postman. Let me just double check.
Yeah. So yeah, it's multiple Razzie Award winner. Off the top of my head, it definitely won Worst Picture. I think Worst Actor, Worst Director. Worst a lot of things. I haven't checked the Razzie nominees.
Kevin Costner is a producer, which isn't surprising because he does produce a lot of the movies that he stars in.
Yeah.
If you really want to get into it, let's see. It doesn't list how many they won. Okay. But it did get, 5 Razzie nominations. Okay. So it won for Worst Original Song, Worst Screenplay, Worst Director, Worst Actor, and Worst Picture.
Great. Oh, man.
Just as a heads up. Of the 5 nominated Razzie films of Worst Picture, I've seen 4 of them. I don't know if I'm willing to subjugate myself to the one I haven't seen.
What's the one you haven't seen?
Fire Down Below.
Okay.
It's a Steven Seagal film.
Yeah. I think I've heard... I've only seen Batman and Robin. I've heard of Anaconda and Speed 2.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I will reveal my thoughts on what I think it ranks. But... we have a little tradition in a game we play. You have not seen The Postman.
Correct.
Sam, what is The Postman about?
Okay, all I've really seen of The Postman is a vision of Kevin Costner, I think, walking across a desolate wasteland. For some reason, I feel like there's an American flag in there somewhere.
Okay.
So for me, it just feels like it is a post-apocalyptic movie
mm-hmm.
about a man whose sole job is to deliver communications across what used to be the United States.
Okay.
And the trials and tribulations that come with that job.
All right.
Presumably he will encounter warring tribes who have survived what was probably a nuclear blast.
Okay.
That is, I'm going post-apocalyptic for
So, Waterworld, except
yeah, I literally, like, that's a great analogy. Like, he went, okay, what if Waterworld, but with no water?
Okay.
That was his idea.
Awesome. All right, we'll find out how close you are.
Okay.
And we'll see how much you enjoy of the 2-hour and 57-minute runtime.
I'm not looking for that. I've enjoyed some movie. I enjoy some bad movies from time to time, as you know. Yeah. That Blu-ray store that I went to, by the way, had a fresh copy of Hudson Hawk waiting there, which was great. I've seen some bad movies that I enjoy. I don't know if this is going to be one of them. I have a sneaking suspicion this is going to be a fucking chore.
Okay.
It's going
to
be a chore.
We did fail to mention that Jordan Spires will be joining us.
Oh, of course. As is tradition now. She does come on for...
Yes. Yeah. She is now she is now committed to joining us for every Worst Picture Razzie winner that we review going forward.
I don't know when I'm going to motivate myself to watch both The Adventures of Ford Fairlane and Ghost Can't Do It.
Well, Ghost Can't Do It is no longer streaming.
Well, that's a shame.
I am working on getting a copy for you.
just so you know.
That's great. I appreciate that.
What I'll do is once I get that copy, I will cook you a steak dinner, mm-hmm. and we will do a double feature.
Ghost Can't Do It and Something Good? Or,
no.
Or Ghost Can't Do It and Adventures of Fort Fairlane?
Yep.
Okay.
The timeline we have to have those watched. And you actually have a couple other ones you got to watch on your own. Well, I'll watch them with you.
Yeah.
But you have to get them watched.
Yeah, for sure.
Before we wrap up the decade.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Well, we'll have to talk.
Yeah. That being said, please. Yeah,
so episode 294 is going to be the Postman next week.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead.
Jordan's pretty excited.
For some reason. Can't imagine why.
I won't lie. I have logged this. I won't reveal my score. Which
I know your score.
I'm pretty sure you know what the score is. I won't reveal on air. As sad as it is, I'm actually kind of looking forward to rewatching this. I say that now. I know I'm going to regret saying that.
You're going to be 20 minutes in and you're going to want to blow your brains out.
probably pretty true.
What's this on right now, by the way?
Oh.
Okay, I'll have to look. We can find that out after.
Yeah, let me know, because if you need...
Do you own this?
Of course I do.
You're fucking...
Let me see.
You're incurable. And he's walking over to his Blu-ray cabinet to find this piece of garbage movie. I am holding in my hand a copy of The Postman right now.
tell me it has a director's commentary, because I will listen to it.
Boy.
Let's see here. Special features...
Do we have a director's commentary?
Yes.
It does?
Oh,
you have to watch it if it does.
I will. Okay, I'll find out
here. You're going to have to watch it twice then? Holy shit.
No. I'll record the commentary and listen to it while I'm at work.
Yeah.
All right.
I was about to... I broke out the letterbox to look something up, but anyway. I can't remember now. The Postman. Oh, that's the wrong The Postman, though.
God damn, I won't lie, I'm pretty fucking excited. Okay. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes. If you give us a 5-star rating and a positive review, it does increase the profile of our podcast, allows more people to find us, which we greatly appreciate. If you're ever sitting around talking to your friends about podcasts, please mention us. We would love to get some more listeners. It'd be awesome. You can also give us a rating on Spotify. And while you're on Spotify, take the 2 moments it'll take you to answer our weekly question. And if you answer that weekly question, I will promise I will read it on air during our Real Talk episodes. You can follow us on Instagram and Threads at sam_manny_movie. You can email us at sammannymoviepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Facebook at Samuel Manuel Movie Podcast. You can follow us on Letterboxd at Manny42 and Sam Reimer, respectively. For the Samuel Manuel Movie Podcast, I'm Manny Manuel.
Takes a few hours.
I'm Sam Reimer. Adios!
Someday, when I'm awfully low, when the world is cold, I will feel a glow just thinking of you and the way you look tonight.